Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
And Ireland still in possession. O'Driscoll, Sexton, Donegal, Callaghan, Loughlin just won. First time O'Driscoll scores. And that is the record. Try number 25 in the Six Nations.
Sunshine 106.8.
A very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, on what promises to be another sweltering weekend here in the capital. We have another busy show for you too to add to that. Leon Blanche will be on before 10 to give us his lucky 15, and Ken will join us all the way from Sheffield for all the latest news coming from the World Championships over there in the snooker. Our magic moment this week is Katie Taylor's win in 2012. We'd love to hear from you and where you were and what you were doing and your memories of that fantastic win for Katie. Peter Breen will be with us as well after 10 just to discuss another fantastic win in the third day of the cricket as Ireland went on to win against England, and he'll be giving us all his thoughts and details and the repercussions for Ireland from that win. Declan Drake is here in studio with me to discuss all the GAA, and there's plenty of chat around the GPA and their proposed new schedule as well, so we'll be having a good chat about that. And Alan Cawley will be along to chat to us about all things domestic in the football. So as always, we'd love to hear from you this morning, get your thoughts on everything that's happening, so you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777. And of course, don't forget that we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068, and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. Of course, as always, I'm joined here in the studio by Declan Drake and our own Paul Morris. Morning, lads.
Morning, Reg.
Morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Nice and refreshed after a little trip down to Leith from there. I had a nice break for myself and, you know, it was beautiful down there. We got up to Sligo for a couple of days as well, enjoying the beautiful beaches and weather up around Inniscrone, Strandhill, Streeda, even up as far as Mullaghmore. So it was a really good few days away and I enjoyed it. And but glad to be back, and I must admit the weather's better here than it was over on the West Coast. So it's always nice to be back. But how are you lads getting on? Everything good year end?
Yeah, not too bad, Reg. You're good.
Do you miss me?
Well. Like a hole in the head, Reg.
Absolutely, Reg. It wasn't quite the same.
Yeah, thanks.
Now we had a good week. We were down in Cork and Kerry for a few days. And again, mixed weather, but absolutely fantastic just to get away and get some real quality fresh air into the lungs and let the body de-stress as well. Yeah, really good.
Nice so they let back. You in down there,
didn't they? They let us in. As long as we didn't talk five in a row or six in a row, we were fine, you know.
Or talk full stop.
Now, now.
Must have been a challenge for you, Declan.
It's only 9:05, Reg. We're here till 11.
Not at all.
Reg is here every week, by the way, in case you're wondering.
Well, there's loads going on, of course, lads. Probably want to start with Champions League last night. Was pretty interesting stuff. City doing the business. You were kind of thinking, Declan, that maybe it was to be expected. But when we are talking Real Madrid, the mammoth organisation that they are, and it's still a big big win for City no matter what way you look at it.
Yeah, it is. It's a huge win for them. But this is the holy grail for Pep Guardiola and Manchester City. This is the level that they have to reach to have to win the Champions League. Massive step towards it last night. They had I think a lot of that hard work was done. Was it back in March now at this stage in the Bernabeu, and to record a good 2-1 home victory last night to advance in the competition? So we're just talking off air. What is it now? Early August at the moment, and the Premier League season is not too far away from starting again, but they have to complete their Champions League campaign first. So the off season for the Manchester City players this year, should they go the distance in the competition, is going to be very, very short.
Yeah. Well, Leon, of course, will be their next opponents, and when you look at it on paper, you'd sort of feel that'll be a handy one after Real Madrid.
Yeah, you would think that. Yeah, but football, as we know, doesn't usually work like that, does it? You know, Leon will see it as a massive opportunity to take a big scalp in the competition. It'll be interesting to be talking Champions League football in August. Usually you're talking, you know, preliminary rounds or getting ready for preliminary rounds for our own clubs in European competition. But such as the strange times we're in, that we're looking forward now, is it to Lisbon the competition moves to be completed over the next few weeks. Interesting times ahead.
Yeah, Saturday week in Lisbon, so it is interesting. Paul, at home, of course, there was plenty going on, the domestic stuff as well, and Bowes are up to second after first half goals from Danny Grant and Keith Buckley.
Yes, Reg, good football all week, actually. If anyone's getting a chance to catch the Watch LOI, which I am getting plenty of it in, it's a fantastic feed, I have to say. Great commentary and everything else. But yeah, every game being shown, €55 it was at the start. And so far, so good for myself. Anyway, it's worth every penny. A euro a match works down to. But yeah, no, fantastic. Got to see some of Bowes there last night. There was loads of sport on. He had the multi-screen last night. It was great. Yeah, as you say, Bowes up to second with a fantastic win against Dundalk. Dundalk stuttering and stumbling since the comeback, Decky. A draw up home to Pats first. Bad. 2 points dropped. And then another couple there last night.
Yeah, 1 point out of six for the defending champions since the restart. Not good at all. I didn't get a chance to see that game last night, but I did see the first goal for Bohemians. Brilliant cross.
Absolutely.
And a super execution.
Excellent.
You know, Keith Long, he's working the Oracle again at Daly Mount Park, and hopefully from their point of view and the league's point of view, they can sustain their challenge over the next couple of months.
Yeah, that defeat, as I say, leaves Dundalk 5 points adrift of Rovers, and they play tomorrow against Derry, so that'll be a tough one for Rovers going up to Derry there tomorrow. Pats have won for the second time since the restart, played three. I think they lost the second one again after the draw against Dundalk, but two goals from Georgie Kelly gave the Saints a 2-0 win at home to Finn Harps. So we'll get Alan Colley's thoughts on all of that a bit later on too. So good results for some people last night.
Absolutely, yeah. Cork are still struggling the goals, of course, with the no away win in 2020, but I suppose there wasn't a lot of games either. So
no, exactly.
We, it sounds worse than it is, maybe, but they're heading to Waterford and they're besieged by their own problems as well. So you'd expect they might get a result there.
Yeah, fingers crossed. As I say, Waterford were thrown into a bit of disarray during the week with two players showing symptoms, and their game against Sligo was put on ice there for a while. But yeah, kick off the RSC at 2 today. That still goes ahead, as we know, as of yet. And then Sligo and Shelburne are the other game they're meeting at the show. Grounds from 5.
Yeah, second visit of the week to the Northwest for Shells. They're up in Finn Harps during the week and came away with a fine win.
Yep.
Absolutely, good stuff. Let's move to the GA, Declan. There's an interesting headline in the Herald where they're talking about the GPA proposing new schedule, and they're looking to slim down the season to 26 weeks.
Yeah, basically run it off between February and July. Which is what their plan is. That's the inter-county season, and then more flexibility for the clubs. Would tend personally to support that type of thinking, Reg, to be honest. It's absolutely crazy that an inter-county season can start on the first Sunday in January with pre-season competitions, O'Byrne Cup and Walsh Cup for Dublin and Leinster, and then not potentially finish until, well, it was August or early September. Then guys come back into the club scene and you have a Leinster club final played 2 weeks before Christmas, almost 12 months of a calendar. It's absolutely crazy. Mm. So I think COVID-19 and the effects of it have refocused the minds brilliantly. And we're seeing the quality of games that we're having over the last few weeks, and hopefully over the next few weeks as well. So we'll certainly support that particular motion to give everybody a fair chance, but particularly the ordinary club player who, for the best months of the year in a lot of counties, is simply cast aside. And you have to look after your club players.
What sort of ears do you think that'll fall on, though? I mean, it might make sense, but other things have in the past and they've fallen on deaf ears. I mean, you mentioned COVID there, maybe might be a bit of a catalyst for change, but it seems like a big change here. Now you're pretty much halving the times frame.
It is, but I mean, the championship season, is, in my opinion anyway, is too long and too protracted. You should be able to run it off quicker, I should say. I can't see a point in having 4 or 5 weeks between a championship game an elite group of people coming together to train collectively, whereas the club player then is left aside. He doesn't know when he's going to have a match again in that period. So, yeah, I think COVID, in many respects, has probably been quite a good thing to happen for the association in that respect, because it's focused the minds. They're trying something different, and I think it's actually working at the moment.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens. Hopefully, they will be open to that type of review, because, as you said, it's definitely in the interest of the players. Speaking of COVID and the players, of course, all activity ceased from midnight, well, last night, we'll say. So, Leash, Offaly and Kildare, there's no activity there in sport for them, as the cases, unfortunately, have risen dramatically in those counties. So, they're just pretty much everything shut down again.
Everything shut down from midnight last night, yeah, absolutely. And you really feel sorry for the people of those three counties. But look, that's the situation that we're in. They're going for local lockdowns this time, which is the right way to do it, and just hopefully from a Dublin perspective, being selfish about it for a moment, hopefully it doesn't cross the county border and affect us again, Reg, because we've seen the effects of it when we hadn't our sport and a lot of other things as well.
Well, I suppose this type of activity would be, in theory, the way that does contain it and stop the movement. It is funny to see, and we talked to Liam Blanche about it though, that in places like Kildare, they will still allow horse racing. I know it's behind closed doors, but there are still people moving in the same circles, so you'd wonder how it's allowed and other sports aren't. But, you know, obviously people with better minds than us know how that all works.
But I think, you know, we have club championship hurling now in Dublin, which we'll talk about later on. I've had the football during the week there as well, but it's important, again, to emphasise the message to people to respect the limit that has been set on attendance at games, 200 people, including players and officials. And if you haven't got a ticket for some of the mouthwatering clashes and prospect over the weekend, don't go to the game. Simple as that.
I think it's been well policed anyway by the clubs. So you're just wasting your time if you do try and go along.
Absolutely.
I don't think you're getting
absolutely
in. So.
And 100% right too.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, Paul, I know you were glued to the telly last night. There's a few things happening across the water. When you went to bed, McIlroy was in great form. When you got up this morning, he'd had a bit of a blow up. The golf, of course. The PGA.
Yes,
talk
ready.
Us through
I
it.
Have 16 cups of coffee into me already, because they decided to play this in San Francisco, which is the far side of America, as everybody knows, and it stops at about 2 or 3 in the morning. But anyway, yes, the first opening golf since Shane's win at Royal Portrush last July 2019, so we're really excited for this. 95 of the top 100 players, and Thursday was good. Good start for couple of the lads, a steady start for most as well, has to be said. But yeah, went to bed last night. Shane was up and down, should we say. He was 20 after 26 holes. He got off to two birdies, sorry, in the first five holes there last night. So he was going good guns, it has to be said, as early in the second round. But then absolutely just blew up, and it's horrible to see, horrible to watch. Looking back this morning there on an Irish player, especially 8, 9, 10 went bogey, bogey, bogey. Picked up another 2, 12 and 13, and then got one back on 15, but his frustration got the better of him on the 13th, his second shot, about 230 odd yards, and he snapped the club over his knee, which is all very well and good if you have TaylorMade or, you know, Srixon or somebody behind you who's giving you clubs.
It's not great for the rest of the round, though.
No, it's not. No, I don't know if you went to go for that club again. But, yeah, listen, it gets the better of you, as I said, because he was going steady and, as I said, picking up two early shots on the first and the fifth. But then, yeah, bogeys, three in a row. And then two, as I say, on 12 and 13. Leaves him frustrated there for Shane on the second round. He's still in the weekend, obviously, he made it. But tied 44th there. The leader, fantastic round here yesterday. Hatton Lee, with a great, great round, 8 under. But some of the other notables are in behind him. Tommy Fleetwood, who we all have, well, some of us have a soft spot for. We like Tommy. Finished twice, joint second in two majors, hasn't got the job done yet, but we'd love to see him do it on US soil again. He's on 6 under with Jason Day and Daniel Berger, with Brooks Koepka all on 6 under, as is Justin Rose, had a great day yesterday too, and Mike Lorenzo Vera. So there's a good few of them there on 6 under. As I say, Shane and Rory, they both made the cut there yesterday. Rory had another interesting round, shall we say. Picked up one on the first, so good start. Picked up a birdie on the first on 3 and 5, then dropped two shots. And then the Rory magic that we know, and it's always there, he's been very, very slow since the restart. Then 7, 8, 9, 10, birdie, 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 birdie. 4 birdies in a row, and here we go. We think, yes, lovely, grand. He's on it. the pep in his step, the walk, the little bounce, you could see, you know, here we go. And then he hits a 7 on the 12th, which is a par 4, so 3 shots straight away.
I didn't see it. What happened on it?
I haven't seen it either. No. I'm not gonna lie. I left him on 10 last night. It was right. Well into the wee hours, about 1:15, and as I said, he was 4 birdies in a row, and I said, here we go. So I woke up this morning to see the 7. He picked one back up on 16, birdie that one, but frustrating for Rory, and it's just what he's been doing the last couple of rounds.
Hearing some complaints, Paul, from people who like watching their golf and are knowledgeable in their golf as well, about the quality of the television coverage.
Yes.
Any thoughts and observations on that?
So ESPN have got this tournament for the first time, and then they have an ESPN Plus, which you can pay, obviously, in the States and stuff like that for the extra golfers. If you're a Shane Lowry fan, which I am, on Thursday you would have been doing very well to see him take at least 3 or 4 shots. It was atrocious. This is, they put the 3 major winners together, so Gary Woodland, Brooks Koepka and Shane were playing together. It was all about Koepka. It's all about the featured groups, as they like to call them. Sky obviously picking up their feed from ESPN, and a lot of frustrated Irish people watching Shane, and he done well on his first day. He was 2 under, and you know, he was steady, he was going good guns, and from an Irish perspective, very hard to see. Last night was a bit better, I have to say. They might have taken a bit on board because they got a good bit of slack on Twitter and social media and stuff like that, but they stuck to the featured groups and predominantly did, which was okay. It was Tiger, Rory and Justin Thomas, who's world number one at the moment. So, but yeah, you would have been doing well to see Shane's few shots on Thursday. Last night, of course, when something like this happens, you know, it goes all over and they can't get enough of it, you know, that kind of way. But Yeah, frustrating on Thursday and for a lot of golf fans. Yeah, but listen, as I said, it probably took the word on board, and it was a bit better last night, a bit better.
What was the cut?
The cut was +1. I'll just make sure of that, Rage, first thing on before
Graham
you go.
McDowell and those didn't make it, so I know Graham was...
Plus two, beg your pardon. Yeah, Graham McDowell didn't make it there yesterday. So listen, as I said, there's a good few in or thereabouts, like me and a major... is always going to be tight anyway. Leader, as I said, Hatton Lee on 8 under, but you've 6 lads there behind him on 2 under, 2 shots back, which is absolutely nothing the way this course plays and stuff like that. You got a couple of lads there, Paul Casey and Cameron Champ there on 5 under, as is Todd, and then you got a load on 4 under. One of my picks for the weekend, Xander Schauffele, on 4 under there. He's tied 11th, so I'm going to keep a close eye on him.
Very good. Okay, well, we're going to be going across to Ken a little bit later on to catch up on things in Sheffield, but it's a pretty red hot championship going on over there, and we saw John Higgins getting the 147, of course. I think it's only the 8th 147 in the Crucible history, so it was brilliant to watch and great to see.
It was I don't know, it was a small bittersweet. Done it with no crowd. It was small before saying he was interviewed after saying that the pressure of the crowd in the last couple of balls, Ken, had obviously now a good bit better. He said that wasn't there, but then to enjoy the moment, there was an elbow bump off the opponent, about it. After World Championship 147, but it'd be interesting to get Ken's thoughts there. No crowd for that moment, particularly.
I want to talk to Ken about that. It's surreal, really, watching it. You know, in that type of environment, it's really weird. I don't know how they get themselves up for it all. To me, it would just be like being in a practice room. You know, like being in competition at all. But you know, Ding Jung Hui and Ronnie O'Sullivan producing a cracking match, 4 frames each as they go into it. Kieran Wilson, he's gone into the second round as well. There's some great stuff going on in it. Mark Williams,
I think, is a real good prospect for this tournament. The way he's playing at the moment, I mean, he won what, beat Stuart Bingham there 13-11.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I might have a chat with Leon off air and see what odds he'll give me on Mark Williams.
Yeah, but you can't write Ronnie off either. No, I know Ronnie is kind of, you don't know what you get with him. It's always the way, and he's kind of been, he was complaining about COVID pre-tournament, then he played anyway, and he went behind quite a lot to Ding Jung Hui. I mean, he was 4-1 down at one stage there, but he's battled back and come back to 4 frames all. So, but it's a good tournament this year. I'm looking forward to chatting to Ken about it, which we will be doing just before 10 o'clock. So make sure you stay tuned in for that. Interesting one across the big pond over in America, obviously, the NFL. Stephen O'Brien will be talking to us later, not today, but later on when the football does come back. But 66 NFL players, and including 8 from the New England Patriots, they've opted out for the 2020 season due to the coronavirus. They notified their clubs on Thursday ahead of the deadline. Obviously, an unbelievable situation in America with the amount of cases that they have and indeed deaths. Terribly frightening over there. But still, 66 NFL players just pulling out of the season. It's a lot.
It is. It's a large chunk of us. I caught Stephen on Twitter there, mentioned a couple of things about it already during the week. But yeah, it is a large portion when you think of 8 players in our squads in the NFL. We know are massive already. But yeah, it's still some huge concerns over stateside. The basketball is currently going on at the moment. And what they've done with that is to get the rest of the season and the playoffs and everything done and out of the way for this season is they've brought every team to Disneyland. It sounds nice. Well, it probably is. They're living on a resort there for the next couple of weeks. But yeah, it's to get their last few games done, keep them all in the same spot. Again, you know, basketball, obviously, it's much smaller squads, smaller teams. NFL, you see what's on the sideline when you're watching one of them games, and the coaches, the trainers, the everything that goes with that. That's the colossal numbers. I don't know. Obviously, fans and stuff like that. There'll be no fans and any of those games early stages. But yeah, it's a big chunk. I'd say that could increase actually before the end of next week. I would say I'm surprised it's only 66. I know it is
at
big.
The moment, yeah, absolutely. You'd be surprised at such a low level.
But it's hard to know how things like that are going ahead anyway, you know, with sport in that situation that they have over there. As you said, Paul, so many people on the sideline coming from, you know, they can't all cocoon in their, the equivalent of Disneyland, let's say, yeah, you know, yeah, in around New York or wherever they might be, or Florida. Like, I mean, the cases are still huge in these places. I don't know how it can go back, but you see, it seems that they're just forging ahead in America regardless.
Dare I say, the bodies and the so-called men in power behind the NFL are, well, let's just say, they're a different type and they would let that go ahead no matter what. Mm. Because we know of owners and we know of their politics and we know where they're from and stuff like that. So, yeah, dare I say, the NFL will have no problem at all putting games ahead. But, you know, players,
you'd wonder,
players risk, though.
I don't know, but I presume there's a players' union for the American footballers in the same way as we have the GPA and the RPI here. You'd imagine there would be, and you'd wonder what the feelings are there in terms of. There is, of course. Sure. I mean, we saw it with the concussion issue. So, I mean, you can't imagine that they'd be allowing their members to get back into the middle of that type of setup.
Here's something I just wanted to get your own opinion on, Reg, actually, as a former professional and that in your sport of rugby. We had a situation during the week where the EFL in the UK have introduced a salary cap. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, it's about 1.5 million is the rate, that maximum rate that clubs are allowed to spend on wages. There's talk now of the PFA over there kicking up a fuss in defence of their members, restraint of trade and all that kind of stuff. Where would you stand on something like that?
There are salary caps already in rugby, and it's been reduced, in fact, in England. So I think it was about 6 million beforehand or 5.5 million per club beforehand in the Gallagher over in the UK, and that was reduced by 1 million. So and that's what Saracens fell down on, because they were finding ways around that. It's a very interesting one, because, you know, from the player's point of view, they'll look at it and say that their careers are short and you try and make as much money as you can while you're able to. So they'll go for the biggest contracts they can try and get, and obviously the more money the better from that point of view. But at the same time, it isn't sustainable for big clubs in France, for example, that would have a budget of 25 to 30 million. There are no caps in that sense. They've got 5 times the budget, so they can just drift into countries and whip up all the players and take them away. So there is a case for salary caps in a lot of cases too, when it's in the same jurisdiction. But, you know, it is an interesting one, because, as I said to you, you know, the French have no problem buying a New Zealander All Black for $1 million a year, Dan Carter or whoever it might be, or, you know, whoever you'd care to, maybe Farrell from England would be a good example of it, whoever you'd care to name. So for Saracens and these guys, they had to find ways around the salary cap. So it's a very, very tricky topic, a very tricky subject. 1.5 million doesn't seem very high, though.
No, it certainly doesn't.
I would have thought, you know,
talking to a couple of grand a week for players, if that's the case.
Yeah. No,
the size of your squad, of course.
Yeah, I would have thought it would be more than that now, because it's certainly in the rugby clubs, it's 4.5 to 5 million, and they can barely manage to pay everybody with that. So that's an interesting one.
Just a very interesting contrast. I'll just have the pages open here in front of me in the City Champions League draw. And potentially, I say obviously a lot of football to be played, but you could have a Man City PSG final in the Champions League. Talk about money.
Yeah,
this is the same Manchester
different planet.
That avoided their,
exactly,
the ban.
Yeah.
Well, that's it, you know. I mean, that's the biggest problem, is it has to be a level playing field, and in many cases it isn't. And if you've got a big sugar daddy coming in and all the money in the world buying things up, then you need protection like salary caps.
There's a very good example, finally, in the UK recently. Bolton Wanderers, right, who are one of the great clubs in English football traditionally, went into financial meltdown recently, right? There was talk of them perhaps even going out of business. And then you look at the likes of contracts that they've been offering players, and players have been signing over the last few weeks. Absolutely crazy stuff, and how they're allowed to do it. The salary cap now might put the brakes on them a little bit, but it's just crazy, crazy stuff.
And then you also have the situation where clubs like Arsenal, you know, talking about laying off 26, 27 people from their set up to save $1 million, let's say.
I think it's more, it's 55 people to save a couple of million, and yet Aubameyang, all the papers this week and today even as well, signing. I'm looking at two Arsenal supporters giving me daggers right now at the moment. But
No, I'm
how much would they save if they offloaded Ozil?
Absolutely. Has he not been offloaded already? It's about 55 players. Myself and Declan were just commenting. Actually, Stephen Bradley, I think, was one of them, still scouting for Arsenal, I believe. So, and to save a couple of to go into a player for a wage, or potentially bring, I think, William from Chelsea, potentially to back that transfer coming into it as well. But yeah, you got to, these clubs, you know, they got to really look at themselves. Ian Wright was very vocal about that this week, you know, saying, oh, with the club and the history and everything else, all about, you know, the family as such, you know, that kind of way. But
like, it's the lower paid staff that keep the place going.
Exactly, on a football stadium day. Yeah.
They're the ones that are being let go. And, you know, some of them have been there all their lives, and they probably on nothing more than 20, 25 grand a year or something like that. But they're out the door, first chance. And in the bigger scheme of things, it just doesn't make sense.
Now, in fairness, we do have to say Arsenal, I think they took a 12%. The pay cost of players and bigger staff and stuff, but 5% that was given back, you know. But, you know, as I said, everyone has to cut the cloth to put it like that. As I say, getting rid of 55 lower end to bring these players in, you know, you do got to ask questions, of course, you know.
Absolutely. Okay, well, that's pretty much it in the papers. Anything else you wanted to cover there?
No, I'm all good. No.
Okay. Well, that's it for the papers. So, still loads to come on the show. Leon Blanche is going to be coming up just after the break to give us his Lucky 15. We'll also be going across the water to Ken to get all of the latest from Sheffield. And coming up in the second hour, of course, we do have that magic moment of Katie Taylor when she won gold in 2012. So we'd love to hear from you on 087 11 55 777 just to give us your thoughts and your memories of where you were on that fantastic day when Katie took gold. Now, delighted to be joined on the line by Leon Blanche, of course, from Boyd Sports. Morning, Leon. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I'm absolutely fantastic. But a morning like that outside, Reggie, looks a cracker.
It's unbelievable. It really is. And we're in for a little bit more of it for the next few days, according to Evelyn and all the rest of them, giving us all that good news. So long may it last.
You're dead right. May it last.
Listen, before we get into our tips and Lucky 15 and a few thoughts on the golf and all that kind of stuff, announcement yesterday, of course, of a lockdown in the counties of Laois and Kildare and Offaly. Strange times indeed, but racing is still going ahead. What are your thoughts on that? I wonder how that's happened.
Yeah, look, I mean, obviously, the three counties, they're having a real tough time of it at the moment. But racing, I suppose it's been running so smoothly, Reggie, for the last kind of number of weeks. The protocols that have been put in place. The jockeys are obviously tested regularly. The people who attend the race courses are tested regularly. So obviously all those tests are coming back negative. People are in good health. And I think when you look at the kind of the space that, say, for example, the Curra tomorrow, no more than, I think it's up to 200 people. I don't even think it'd be anywhere close to that on a race course tomorrow. But look, I think from racing's perspective, it's great that it's still on. It's only on because I think they've proven that they can do it in a safe manner. Everyone's health is priority. And I think the protocols, as I said at the top of the piece, that have been put in by the IHRB, they're very stringent, they're very strict, and nobody's had a problem since the return of racing. So I think they need to be commended upon their efforts there. And hopefully, in this next couple of weeks, those three counties that you mentioned, hopefully we can limit the community transaction and we can move forward. Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's the idea of it. And I think there'll be plenty out there who have mixed feelings on it and would argue that other sports could do the same. But we'll not get into that because, you know, it's nothing to do. We have no say over that. We might argue it all day long, but it's we've made the decision that is what it is. And I'm afraid people are just going to have to live with it, whether we like it or don't like it. But in the meantime, of course, there is plenty going on, and you're going to give us a lucky 15 to brighten up this weekend even more. Where are we looking at? Cork, Newmarket and Haydock, is it?
Yeah, that's it, Reggie. I think we'll probably start down in Cork. The first race there is due off at 2 o'clock. And there's a horse I really like in the opening contest. She's so well bred. Her name is called April Showers. She's trained by Dunica O'Brien, of course, the son of Aidan O'Brien. She's been ridden by the man of the moment. This young kid, Gavin Ryan, is just firing in winners all over the place. He actually still gets to claim £3 off the back of this daughter of Galileo. So I think April Showers could run a huge race in that first race at 2 o'clock in Cork. The big race of the day is at 3:40 in Cork. It's the Platinum Stakes. It's a listed contest. And for me, Reggie, the one I'm going to go for is Soul Search, number 13, Jerry Lyons. Sorry, just to give you a couple of prices, April Showers is 11-4.
Right.
Soul Search is 11-2. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Colin Keane went to Goodwood last week, so he's on his two-week holiday when he came back from the UK. So Gary Carroll steps in to ride Soul Search. So that's number 13 in the 3:40. At Haydock, they've got a couple of very decent races. The 2:05 is a listed contest, and the 2:40 is a Group 3 race. And I'm going to go with Frankie and John Gosden to win the 2:40, the Rose of Lancaster Stakes. Number 5 on the race card is called Global Giant. It's a favourite, but I think it's a very worthy favourite at even money. So that's the third leg of my lucky 15. And finally, we'll go to Newmarket, where undoubtedly the star attraction on the card today is in the 3:20. It's the Solera Stakes for fillies. It's a Group 3 over 7 furlongs. And a man who I think you've got to follow in this race, I think he's won 3 out of the last 4 or 2 out of the last 3. But it's trainer Mark Johnson. He trains number 3 on the race card, Dubai Fountain, for Sylvester D'Souza on board. 100-30 chance. So Dubai Fountain is the last leg of my lucky 15.
Excellent stuff, Leon. Okay, so that's April Showers in Cork at the 2 o'clock. April Showers 11-4. Soul Search 11-2 in the 3:40. In Haydock, Global Giant at Evens. And in Newmarket, the 3:20. We're looking at Dubai Fountain at 100-30. So that's a nice, if that comes in, that'll be a nice little collection. There's plenty going on in other sport as well. Just want to get your thoughts really quickly. City, of course, taking care of Real. Seems to me like going on to a nicer game next against Leon. What are we looking at for outright for City to take down at this stage?
Yeah, look, I think, Reggie, you know, the City last night, they were probably the better team. Two huge mistakes, obviously, by Varane. You don't associate mistakes like that with him.
Yeah.
But City, they'll be pleased that Leon have gone through. Look, they were joint favourite before it. They've even hardened into shorter favourites now. Around about the 2-1 mark. I think Bayern Munich, they should easily see off Chelsea.
Yeah.
They hammered them at the bridge. And you know something, Reggie? I can see either City or Munich, or maybe someone like Atletico Madrid this season. They knocked out Liverpool.
Yeah.
They will be very stubborn on a one-off game. Simeone won't mind putting the backs against the wall and defending for 90 minutes and trying to nick a goal. It's going to be different. Quarterfinals now. One-off game, knockout stages. So I'm really keen to see how it develops in the next couple of weeks. But City, this, I still think, Reggie, however, their back four, it's just not strong enough.
Yeah.
When you see a man 34, 35, Fernandinho, having to be played centre-half and Pep has spent 400 million quid on defenders, something's not right.
Yeah.
So I think Bayern Munich for me to win it outright. And then, of course, the golf, Reggie.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying the golf. It's been absolutely sensational stuff. We've got a couple of Irish hopes. Shane Lowry, obviously, one under. He was one over yesterday. McIlroy, two under after his rounds. The leader is Lee, an 8 under par. He's a 16-1 chance. Tommy Fleetwood, 6 under at 8-1. But I think, honestly, this guy, Xander Schauffele, I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I still think at 14-1, Reggie, he's 5 under. He's only 3 off the lead. 4 under and 1 under are his two rounds, respectively. I think he could go very close because it's a course he knows very well. He grew up around that area, and I think he could go mightily close to lifting the PGA at 14-1.
Excellent stuff. Great, Leon. We've plenty to look at there for the next hour or two before everything kicks off. So thanks a lot for your input on that again, and looking forward to having a look at that lucky 15. You take care of yourself.
All the best, Reggie. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Leon Blanche there on Boyle Sports, giving us all his thoughts on sport for this weekend. Some good prices there. I think, Paul, you might even be having a look at Xander Schauffele there at 14-1. Be well worth a little punt.
He was done during the week, Reggie, for me. He's on me.
So you got him at 66s. Typical you. Yeah. No, notice the text message didn't come through on that one either. Thanks. Cheers. All right, we're going to take another break now. When we come back, though, we will be going over to Ken. Before I go, I will give you that lucky 15 again, because I know you're all hanging on, waiting for it. So, in Cork, the 2 o'clock April showers is an 11-4 shot. The 3:40 in Cork, it's Soul Search at 11-2. Haydock, the 2:40 Global Giant, that's an even money shot. And in Newmarket, the 3:20 is Dubai Fountain at 100-30. Time to turn our attention to snooker, of course, and our own Ken is over in Sheffield, taking care of business and keeping an eye on events for us over there. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Morning, Reg. How are you?
We're doing great. Cracking morning here in Dublin, Ken.
Yeah.
I'm looking out the window. Sun is splitting the stones. What's it like over there?
It's the same here. It was actually 34 yesterday, and it's 25 and rising already at 10 o'clock in the morning. But
oh,
I'm actually, I've been moved out to Stockley Park, where they do all the VAR, because this is where we're doing the commentating and where the studio is now, because the Crucible is so small that there's no studio at the Crucible this year.
Yeah.
There's only a couple of commentators, Alan McManus and Joe Perry, and Rob Walker's doing a bit of commentary up there, but all the rest of the boys are down here in Stockley Park in London near Heathrow.
Oh, the A-team are near Heathrow.
Oh, yeah, except John Virgo, who couldn't come over because he lives in Spain now. And they put the lockdown on Spain, the quarantine on Spain, on the Friday before he was due to fly out over here. So poor old John Virgo is watching it from Spain. But yeah, we miss him too badly, yeah.
Well, he would
there's
have been.
No, there's no where's the cue ball going, you
know? No, yeah. It's missed big time. But
yeah,
it would have been great to have his voice, of course, during the week with the 147 that we saw from Higgins,
which was
a strange one. We were talking about it here in studio. It's a strange one watching it and no major crowd eruption.
Yeah, I know. We're so used to, it's the, he's the seventh person now to make a 147 at the Crucible, the first being Cliff Thorburn all the way back in 1983. Can you believe it's that long ago? Yeah. But
I remember it.
You know, when you're at the Crucible and there's one of the lads are on a 147, even after four reds or four blacks, it's almost like a round of applause every shot.
Yeah,
you know, there's a build-up to a crescendo almost, you know. And unfortunately, he didn't have that this year. But it doesn't take away from the magnificent feat. And it's one of the it's one of the few things that he hasn't achieved in the game, John Higgins. I mean, he's achieved everything else, but that was one of the few things of making a maximum at the Crucible. So it's another little feather in his cap, but a wonderful achievement. But my bet is, Reggie, I think there's going to be another 147 before the tournament is finished. So that's a little prediction. And I think maybe Ronnie O'Sullivan is the man to do it.
Because the standard is that high this year. I mean, it is very, very high level of competition.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we're going to have a record number of centuries. We had the record number of centuries last year. It was 100. But I think because of the crowd not being there, there's less pressure even on some of the new guys and the lesser-ranked pros, which makes a big difference. So they can go out there, even though it's the importance of the World Championship, of course, they're playing for a big prize and big prize money. But the fact that there's no crowd there,
the crowd at the
Crucible, because they're so close to you, that, you know, you can feel you feel the tension, you feel the proximity of them, and that adds to the pressure. And that's why the Crucible is so different. But they don't have that this year. So some of the players, and you're seeing with the debutants, you're seeing Kurt Maplin knocking John Higgins out.
Yeah.
You have Andy McGill and Jamie Clark, who's won six matches now already in this championship. And it's the first time at the Crucible for him. And he's 6-2 up, and he looks like he could go into the quarterfinals. And if that happens, then we'll have at least one qualifier in the semifinals. So there's a lot of different stories happening, but a big difference without the crowd here this year, you know.
Absolutely. Defending champion Judd Trump, he's managed to get through to the quarterfinals.
Yeah.
Bit of a nervy wing over.
Yeah, nervy. He was very nervy in his first match. He won 10-8 against Tom Fowler, and he won 13-11 against Yan Bintel. He hasn't played well yet, and it looks like, because we talk about the Crucible course, and no first-time winner of this championship has ever come back and defended the title in all the 43 years now it's been at the Crucible. And it looks like it's weighing heavy on Judd Trump.
Yeah.
I mean, he's had a magnificent season. He's won six ranking tournaments, but it looks like it's weighing heavy on him. Now, he's going to have to improve immensely if he's going to win this championship, but at least he's in the quarterfinals, unscathed. He's come through a couple of tough matches, and that may stand to him. I'm hoping that he'll play a lot better. I mean, everybody's probably hoping for a Ronnie O'Sullivan, Judd Trump final. That would be magnificent, but there's a lot of snooker left to be played. O'Sullivan is embroiled in a really tough battle with Ding Junhui. It's 4-all as we speak.
But he was 4-1 down at one stage, but he managed to get himself back to 4-all, Ronnie. So good comeback from him in the first session. But as you said, what a cracking match that is. I mean, Ding Junhui, I know Ronnie has huge respect for him, and I think he's very friendly with him as well. But he's an amazing player. I mean, he could easily do Ronnie.
Oh, he could do, yeah. He did Ronnie here a couple of years ago, the last time they met in the World Championship. So I think if anybody who hasn't won the World Championship of the players, I think I'd like Ding Junhui to win it. You know, it'd be great for the game. You know, he's such a huge following. I mean, there might be 200 million people watching him play Ronnie O'Sullivan in this match over the course of the couple of days that they're going to play. So he's got huge sort of pressure on him, huge expectation. He's been sort of the flag bearer for China, and that's why so many other young kids have taken up the game in China, and we have so many Chinese professionals now. So if anyone were to win it outside of, you know, the likes of O'Sullivan or Trump and that, I'd love Ding Junhui to win it. I think he deserves it, and his talent deserves it as well.
Absolutely. Okay, well, Mark Williams, I mean, I love following him on Twitter. He's a great character, you know. He just doesn't care, and he's putting out stuff, and even in before the build up to it, he just seemed to be enjoying himself. But he put in a brilliant performance to take care of Stuart Bingham, 13-11, another cracking match.
Yeah, and if he wins it, I mean, the last time he won it a couple of years ago, he did that press conference, you know, in his new... He said if he wins it this time, he'll do cartwheels in the nude all the way to the press conference. We don't want to see that. But no, but no, it's great for him. He played fantastically well against Joe Bingham. It was a tough match, 13-11 in the end. And, you know, he was like a 45-50-1 outsider for this championship. You know, he's won it three times, and he's still in there. He plays the winner of Ronnie and Ding. And, I mean, if he can get through that, he could win this championship again. But... He'll have to play a bit better, I think, against Ronnie or Ding. But he's in there with a fighting chance. And, you know, you wouldn't put it past him because he has that experience. He has the talent. And he's so laid back, you know what I mean, that it wouldn't bother him whether the crowd are there or not.
Mm. I know what you mean.
Yeah.
Mark Selby's the other one, 13-12. He managed to get through. All these matches, they're just so close.
They are. We've had a lot of high-quality games, a lot of really close matches. And another qualifier, Nopon from Thailand, lovely guy. Sean Murphy as well in the first round. So, tough match for Mark Selby to get through. He's still in there. He's one of those players, like John Higgins, you know, a great sort of match player, won it three times. And you never discount him because even though he's not playing a high level of snooker like he was maybe a couple of years ago, but he's one of those players that, and like a horse, you know, for the longer distance, you know, and they get better as the sort of tournament goes on. And he could come good as well. He waits on the winner of Neil Robertson and Barry Hawkins, who start out this morning. That's the match I'm commentating on. Starts out at 10 o'clock this morning. So that's going to be another mouth-watering prospect if Neil Robertson comes through that. You know, two former winners of this great championship.
Who's your gut feeling for at this stage?
I'd like to see a Trump-O'Sullivan final. I think that would really, capture the imagination of a lot of people because they're two of the greatest protagonists of this wonderful game. They're two showmen, and they'll go for it. You know, they want to make big breaks. They won't be messing around with a lot of safety, but there'll be, you know, some great pots, great breaks, and, you know, exquisite snooker. And that's what you'd like to see. I think that would be an epic final. If it's not them, I'd like to see Ding and who else is in the top half? Yeah, Ding and Judd. Or, you know, someone like that. Or even one of the debutants, Kurt Maflin, which is a great story. You know, a lad from London moved to Norway, married a Norwegian girl and represent Norway here. Just beat John Higgins, playing brilliant snooker. So maybe a first-time winner would be great as well. So whatever. But I think all the snooker fans are hoping for a Jude Ronnie final. But it never always works out like that, as we know in sport, Reg.
Only too well. You enjoy the rest of the sunshine when you do get out and about down there near Heathrow. I'm sure you'll make the most of it.
I need to. I'm like Casper the Friendly Ghost. I'm so white.
Well, you might be better off. Stay safe over there. We'll see you soon when you get back. Our own Ken Doherty there giving us all the latest. He's rooting for a O'Sullivan final with Judd Trump, which would be a mouth-watering clash, there's no question about it. Coming up in the second hour, we will be talking to Peter Breen about that great win for Ireland in the cricket on the third day, which has all sorts of repercussions for the Irish team, and he'll be going through that for us. Declan Drake is in studio here as well to talk all things GAA, the club action, and the more chat about the lockdowns. And Alan Cawley, host of Cawley's Call, of course, will be here to talk about Bowes moving up to second in the SS Airtricity and all the other results, and indeed the Champions League last night. So still lots to come on the show. We'd love to hear from you as well on 087 11 55 777 to get any texts or anything else you'd like to talk to us about. Now, we're reeling back the years again this week for the magic moment in sport, and we're looking back at the wonderful Katie Taylor's win as she took down the title in the 2012. It was the 9th of August 2012 when she went on to win the gold medal for Ireland, and it was watched by pretty much everyone. Let's just have a little listen to this.
Ladies and gentlemen, the winner by a score of 10 points to 8 and the Olympic champion in the red corner representing Ireland, Katie.
I didn't know what way the decision went, you know, in the end. It was so tight. It was always going to be like that kind of fight. But it was just relief, really, and just it was an incredible moment, the best day of my life. It's unbelievable. This is a dream come true for me, and I've dreamed of this moment ever since the start of boxing, and now it's here. I'm an Olympic champion, so thank God for such a great victory.
Yes, indeed. What a great victory it was. An amazing achievement by the wonderful Katie Taylor. I remember it so well. I've known Katie since she was a tiny wee girl up around the Ballywaltrim area in Bray, being a Bray man myself. She grew up, she was a fantastic footballer all her life as well. Played for Ireland, of course, in ladies football. But boxing was her true love. Her father, Pete, had the boxing club up there in the St. Fergal's and Ballywaltrim Community Centre up at the end of the Boghall Road, and right beside the church. And it's, I don't even think it's something else now, but it was an amazing time when she was growing up, and always loved her boxing, and throughout the years was brilliant at it, and went on to Europeans and championships and everything else. But it was that moment in 2012 that really cemented it for her, and winning that title, you know, and the gold medal, Declan. It's something that'll just stick with most people for the rest of their lives.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It really is one of those where were you moments, isn't it?
Yeah.
In Irish sport and Irish life in general. And she'd done so much in her career to that point. And then when they brought women's boxing into the Olympics, well, it was Taylor, mate. Excuse the pun.
You were working on that one all week, were you?
But that's the way it worked out. It was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, there's always a sense of uncertainty in sport. We know about that. We talk about that quite a lot in different sporting events. But I just had a feeling, you know, that once she got into that ring that fateful afternoon, that there was no way she wasn't coming out without the gold medal.
Mm.
And it really was right up there with the greatest sporting moments of all time, including, of course, Michael Carruth, who had done it in Barcelona himself in 92.
Yeah, well, she defeated Sofia Ochigava, the Russian boxer, to win that 10-8 in the final bout was what brought it home for her. But I suppose at the time as well, you have to remember, it was still somewhat of a fledgling sport, female boxing. She had brought it to the fore. There's no question about it. She had done so much herself to bring women's boxing right up there in the public eye. And I think I don't think it's unfair to say that she was the main catalyst for it being such a success and for it being where it is today because of her success around the world. And even before this gold medal, you know, with Europeans and everything else that she'd won, the name Katie Taylor was well known. Where were you, Paul?
I was in the older Sunshine building where we were around on the quays there. I remember it on the Thursday morning. We were all huddled around watching a small TV screen. As I didn't have big flat TV screens over there. But
it's only 8 years ago. We're not going back to the 60s here.
You know what that old studio was like. You know what that old studio was like. No, I do remember. It was great. It was great. There was, I think, RTE saying over that there was nearly 1.1 million watching that on TV, but it was just fantastic. And it was kind of the start of the age of the kind of online instant social media stuff. Well, I'd say start, it was obviously a few years, but you're looking at, I mean, I remember Darragh O'Brien for the whole thing, a proud Bray man, and it was, you know, fully 110% behind her, and you know, pictures coming from the arena, the noise from that arena, I think, broke all decibel levels and stuff like that. And there was a famous picture he has of Princess Anne with her hands over her ears, that, because the noise was just absolutely amazing. The place erupted, and then he kind of getting, you know, the scenes from all over the country and people putting up different pictures. There was a great one there as well from Inroad Air in Euston Station. The whole place at a standstill watching screens, you know, kind of these kind of moments of, you know, everyone kind of remembers where you were. It was fantastic to see. And then, as I said, the likes of Twitter and everything else getting going, and famous people tweeting. The likes of Samuel L. Jackson chipped in with one, you know, all of Ireland raise a point for Katie, gold member, Russia beat down, he said. You know, it was brilliant to see. Lasting a memory big time.
I think, you know, of the great Jimmy McGee, the late great Jimmy McGee, and all the great sporting commentaries he had in his long, very successful career. But I would say that if Jimmy was here now with us and you asked him what his favourite sporting moment he commentated on, he would have said that.
Mm-hmm.
You could hear the emotion in his voice when the gold medal was being presented to Katie. But 5 times world champion, and of course, as we know, she's gone on to have a very successful professional career. 15-0 is the record at the moment, and she has a title defence coming up in the next couple of weeks as well, doesn't she?
Yep.
She does indeed.
Yeah, so we wish her the best with that.
All going well. I'll never forget the return home to Bray. I mean, you couldn't get in or out of the place for hours in the morning or
to get in out of it the best of times, right? Yeah, traffic.
Yeah, that's true. The traffic can be tough out there, but it was particularly bad that day. But the seafront was absolutely mobbed. It was like the air show all over again. It's 100,000 people all down along the seafront, and Katie was down at the bandstand there, and it just was so fitting, you know. I mean, all her life down around that area, and her boxing club down at the harbour there. just down the road from where the homecoming was. So it was a fantastic moment. Great for the town of Bray as well, and great for everybody that knew her. So well done, Katie Taylor, Olympic champion, 9th of August 2012. That's our magic moment today, and we look back with fond memories of it, as I'm sure all of you do out there as well. Well, it's time to turn our attention now to the cricket, and during the week it was a great result for Ireland, and with all sorts of repercussions. Delighted to be joined on the line by Peter Breen, of course. Morning, Peter, how are you?
Morning, Reggie. Hi, Declan. How are you doing, Paul? How's things?
All good here, thankfully. So it's been described as a stunning win on the third day for Ireland in that cricket during the week. I know you're a big fan, so tell us a little bit about the repercussions from this.
Well, it was a funny one. So in the first 2-1 internationals, it was the first. It's very unusual for Ireland to get to play a series against a top-ranked nation. So I think that's important to outline. And what this series, you know, when you're given the restrictions around COVID, the fact that there'd be no cricket played at all, the fact that the squad had been in a quarantine bubble in Hampshire for 4 weeks, including the matches, they're now, the southern-based players are now in a 2-week quarantine. So they can't even go out and enjoy the celebrations of beating the world champions on last Tuesday night. And the fact that Ireland were steadily getting better as the tournament continued. So when I say tournament, it was a series, of course. But in the first 2 internationals, yeah, probably finding their feet, hadn't really hit the heights that they'd hoped to. Some very good performances with Andy McBride and Curtis Camper, who's a South African-born player who's really come to the fore. He's playing at a YMCA in Dublin. And very, very promising all-rounder. He shot a huge amount of composure against a very strong England attack. So that was encouraging, but again, just couldn't get that consistency across 1-11. But credit, it was funny, we were talking last week, and one of the points I'd made, and I was happy to be proven wrong, was I kind of felt that maybe we lacked a bit of experience up front. Maybe William Porterfield, who was the captain, probably should have played. But, he was in and around the squad. He's an opening batsman. And in fairness to Andrew Balburnie, who's the new Ireland captain, he stuck with the tried and tested. He struck with the youth, I beg your pardon. Mm. He continued with rewarding those young players because Ireland needs to build a new squad now with a really busy 2 and 3 years ahead of them. And he stuck with those young players and we bore the fruits of that on Tuesday night. Okay, we lost the series 2-1. This isn't about, you know, getting sentimental about we're great, great losers, you know, or anything like that. They absolutely dominated them. And it was Paul Sterling with 100, Andrew Balburnie with 100. If we want to take it, Owen Morgan, who's reared out of Rush, North County, Malahide, with 100. Mm. So we could take some pride in that. And I think what it shows with Ireland is that, A, we need more matches. The challenge is now, though, that Ireland has no fixtures on the immediate itinerary. So how that going to happen, you know, with everything that's going on in the world, that's going to be a challenge. But it certainly did show that there's an awful lot of potential there. And that if you stick with a team, we've got really good coach in Graham Ford and a backbone of a very, very talented team coming through as well. So there was a lot to be thankful for and a lot to be hopeful for, I think.
Okay. Now, I know you mentioned before that this series has more context than previous matches or tours would have had. Explain to us how that works.
Yeah, so we're in a 13-team league now, and the top 7 teams will immediately qualify for the Cricket World Cup in India, which is in 2023. England, as we know, are the current World Cup champions. So the top 7 plus India, because India are the host team, will qualify. So effectively, it's a 10-team World Cup. So there's going to be 5 teams competing for 2 spots. So that's the basic, the overall picture of that is. So obviously you want to pick up as many points as you possibly can. Honestly, at the start of the series, if we knew that it's 10 points per win. Mm-hmm. So had we thought at the start of the series, we would have got 10 points out of the series against the world champions, you'd have bitten your hand off. So that's really encouraging because now Ireland are going to be playing a series of teams over the next year or two. And you have a very good chance when you look at, you know, we're going to be playing against, we won't have to play India, Australia, South Africa and Sri Lanka. They're strong teams who Ireland don't have a great record against. Mm. So we're playing against teams like the West Indies, potentially New Zealand, Afghanistan. They're countries who we feel we can possibly nick results out of. So actually, all of a sudden now, by picking up 10 points, rather than playing in an inconsequential series, and then, you know, everyone gets patted on the head and then they move on back to club land and trying to pick up whatever fixtures are going on. There's context to cricket now. Mm. And that gives everyone a lift. It gives everyone a focus. And it also means now that, you know what, it's the rest of the world is going to sit up now and take notice and kind of go, actually, these lads aren't going to be a pushover. We know they can win one-off games. Like, Ireland winning these games isn't unusual. Back to 2007, we beat Pakistan at Sabina Park. Mm. Back to 2011, Ireland beat England in Bangalore. But now, all of a sudden, you're talking, okay, actually, these guys are improving. And there's a lot of talent there. All the Irish players are based back in Ireland. As I said, you've a quite an unusual setup now where the Dublin-based players and the Leinster-based players can't play for 2 weeks, but Paul Sterling can play for North Down against Warringstown up the north. Yeah, yeah, and that's just by stint of, you know, the different regulations or whatever. Yeah, so it's there's a lot to look forward to.
So what's the challenge, Peter? I mean, I remember the very early days, I crossed both codes from amateur to professional in rugby, and I remember, as you said, we could get one-off wins against the big teams in the past, in the amateur era, but we couldn't get the consistency and we couldn't compete at that level on a regular basis. How can the cricket guys get to that? More games, a better level of competition, a professional league?
Well, that's exactly it. You know, in the context of more games, as I mentioned before, we're obviously slightly curtailed at the moment because you don't really know what the landscape's going to be. The Euro T20 Slam, which was going to be the Ireland's, Holland and Scotland's own T20 tournament, has been postponed for obvious reasons this year. That was supposed to happen last year, but it didn't happen either. So again, that provides exposure. It means that some top-end, high-class, world-class players will play in like a Dublin franchise or a Belfast franchise or whatever it is. So that's one opportunity. That's going to be a shop window. I think for Test cricket has been awarded to Ireland in recent years. To be honest, I don't think Test cricket should be necessarily a focus for Ireland, but it's something that it's great and that we have it. But really, one-day international cricket, T20 cricket, will really where you're going to get capture the hearts and minds. And it just provides a better context for people to prepare. Because realistically, we're not going to be playing more than two test matches a year. It just, you know, from logistics and whatever else. The other area, like Cricket Ireland have done a good job for the most part. I think the coaching structures, there's a guy called Breen O'Rourke who's played an incredible role in the development of players across Ireland. That's going back to the Kevin O'Briens and the Owen Morgans and William Porterfield and Gary Wilson back in, you know, back 15, 20 years. But he's still there. And you can see now that the younger players, the Harry Tectors, Gareth Delaney's, Mark Adair, Josh Little, have all come through this underage system. So there's a lot of potential there. And I suppose it'd be remiss of us not to talk about the women's game because Kim Garth is one of the most talented cricketers in the world. She's actually just gone down to Cricket Australia. She's played. It's a blow in the sense that you don't want to lose your best players, but it's a big positive in the sense that people are recognising that Ireland can produce players, and they have done for many years. So, you know, she's going to see how her career can pan out, whether she can break into that Australian team. They're an outstanding team in themselves. So again, it just shows, and it shows that there is potential. But I suppose the opportunity for cricket has a bigger opportunity than a lot of other sports because of its reach in the context of India, Southeast Asia, in markets possibly that the likes of rugby, football, obviously Gaelic football mightn't penetrate. Mm. So there is an opportunity for cricket to expand and to globalise. It's just when and how that can happen. So more and more series like we've just had are going to be very important. The team are doing the business on the field, so that's great. And back that young team who are coming through because they're not going to be perfect straight off.
Yep.
But certainly there's enough potential there. And we have a world-class coach in Graham Ford. He's a South African who would have coached Sri Lanka. He would have coached in England as well with the likes of Surrey. And he's doing an incredible job. So with kind of limited-ish resources, Ireland are managing to improve. And let's hope with more matches they can get even better.
Excellent stuff. Well, congratulations to Captain Andrew Bilbirnie and his team and the entire squad on a great result. And as you say, the future looks bright and long may it continue. Peter, thanks for that chat. Time to turn our attention now to GAA. And Declan Drake is in the studio here with us. So, Dec, plenty happening regardless of lockdowns and restrictions and all sorts of bits and pieces that have been going on. And I suppose the second round of the senior football, Bowden getting the win over Vincent's.
Yes, indeed, making it 2-2 in the defence of their county title, Reg, in Group 3. A 5-11 1-0-117 victory away to St Vincent's. So really, Anthony Rainbow's charge is up and running in some style with those two victories. And to go to Park Nave Inchin and score five goals against St Vincent's really puts a serious marker down. And I think that the lockdown period has actually significantly helped Ballyboden. Because if you remember, they won the county title last November against Thomas Davis. They went into the Leinster Club Championship, which they won. And then they were working collectively all the way through the Christmas period. Because with the change in structure in the Club Championship, the All-Ireland semi-final was the first weekend in January. And then the final, which unfortunately they didn't reach, was a couple of weeks later. So they were going all the way through that. They would have been starting back in their Dublin Senior Football League a couple of weeks after that. And again, you know, you're on the road once again. But the lockdown came and there's now complete freshness to them and they've taken full advantage of it, as has been shown in their results. But we must take this opportunity indeed of extending our sympathies to the family of the great Brian Mullins, the former Vincent's and Dublin star, whose brother Sean unfortunately passed away there during the week. So sympathies to all at Park Nave Inchin. But the Bowden boys are up and running and will once again be a serious force in this year's championship. Elsewhere, well, St Jude's, Reg, like Bowden, have made it 2-2. They beat Ballantyre St John's. Nafina then had a home win over Luke and Sarsfields. And elsewhere, Kilmacud Crokes there motoring nicely as well. Raheny and Skerry's Harps, who beat last year's finalists Thomas Davis. So one round of games to go and still some issues in terms of qualification to be sorted out there.
Okay, excellent stuff. Well, it's interesting what you said there about Bowden. We're going to come back to that after our next section on the hurling, because I want to come back to that point about you talking about rest and the players getting a bit of a chance to recuperate, because the interesting stuff with the GPA. But the hurling, and the final round, of course, is on this weekend of the hurling, and quite a lot of issues have already been resolved in terms of qualification.
Yes, indeed. Six teams have progressed to the knockout stages of the 2020 Championship. Vincent's, Crokes, who of course would be dual clubs, Luke and Sarsfields, Bridget's as well, Coola, the defending champions, and Nafina are all safely through. And there's a very interesting clash this evening, Ballyboden taking on Craig Kieran at 6:30. Now, only scoring difference separates those two teams at the moment, and there's still a knockout place available, so that'll be an interesting one. Coola, the defending champions, like their counterparts Bowden in football, are motoring nicely. They've had 2-2. They play Nafina at 4:45 this evening at Parnell Park. Bridget's, who were last year's beaten finalists, back on track again this year, while Whitehall Column Kills are in the mix there as well. So by 6 o'clock or so tomorrow evening, we'll know the quarterfinalists in the senior hurling championship. And unlike previous years, we'll be able to get the games on pretty quick as well, which I think is fantastic at this time of the year when hurling should be played.
Absolutely. Well, there's no doubt as we look outside at that beautiful sunshine, it does bring brilliant memories of epic hurling clashes and the best game there is, bar none, in my opinion, my humble opinion.
Thinking about the dates now, I don't think we'd have been too far off the All-Ireland final this year under normal circumstances.
Absolutely,
you know,
we're not far off, is right. Interesting, a very enjoyable, I have to say, documentary on during the week there, Sean Boylan. Obviously, they were going back looking at the wonderful, successful Meath teams that he managed. 23 years he was in charge there. What do you make of the documentary?
It was riveting television. With the exception, of course, of the clips of 91, which they just had to get in there, didn't they? Just when we get over it, they rehash it for us. Sean is a tremendous, tremendous man, tremendous character. He was a hurling man, which I knew about before he came into football. And I think the way it was a job that no one seemed to want at that particular time. Meath football was at such a low ebb.
Yeah.
Sean came in, took on the challenge, moulded that first team to win the 87-88 All-Irelands. Fantastic group of men, tough as nails. Absolutely tough as nails. They would go through a brick wall for him, and they did, as well as running up and down hills in Tara and other places, doing daft things. But he moulded that team, and then every great manager can see a team disband, break up for all kinds of reasons, regroup, reform, and he did it again. and again with new generations of players. So one of the truly iconic characters of GAA, and a very nice man to boot as well.
Amazing to see the respect that the players had for him. You know, you could see there was real affection there. Dave Beggy, I mean, I wouldn't played with Beggy.
Jinxie, of course, played rugby.
He did. He was Leinster as well, and unbelievably talented flyer, wing on the wing, great pace, and you saw it, of course, in those Meath games, huge talent, and a great crack as well, great crack to be around as a character. But there was other, all the names roll off the tongue when you see that documentary, and you see the players and the caliber of players that were there. Talking about him in the way that they did, there was huge affection, and he seemed to bring a lot of players out of themselves and get the best from them, maybe who wouldn't have reached their potential without Boylan.
Absolutely, absolutely. And there was a lot of players who had a lot of mileage on the clock and were around a long time as well, and may even have been, you know, contemplating their futures at that particular time.
Yeah.
Sean came in and said, "No, lads, come on, one more go. And then you can imagine, as I did, because I was in Croke Park that day, because my father, late father, was a proud Meath man. Yeah. The range of emotion that came out when they won the All-Ireland and when they went up to collect the Sam Maguire. And had a fantastic rivalry with Cork at that period as well, between 87 and 90. They met in three All-Ireland finals and one of them went to a replay. My God, some of the hits in those games were amazing.
There was one clip where I don't know who it was, but they were playing against Cork, but I don't know who it was.
Teddy McCarthy came off couple of times in those clips.
I thought he must have decapitated whichever Meath player it was. It all happened so quickly. All I saw was the flash of red coming in the jersey hit him like across the ears, must have been the level, never mind above the neck, and leveled him. Looked like he decapitated him, and this Meath player was just left prone on the ground and just carry on. But on you go.
The great thing about that rivalry is it was tough, it was intense. I wouldn't say hatred, that might be a little bit strong, but there was a lot of dislike, if you like, between the two teams that manifested itself in some of the games. But I tell you, if there's any kind of charity event in either county, if someone falls in hard times or whatever the case might be, those guys are the first to go to Cork or vice versa and lend their support. So there's the camaraderie is there somehow, despite the fact that they were knocking lumps out of each other on the pitch for years.
What happens on the pitch stays on the pitch. Yeah, that's always been the case. Indeed. I was quite surprised in the documentary the way Boylan came across. I would never have realised his shyness that, you know, I didn't know that about him. That really came across in the documentary, that he's quite a meek character.
Yeah, and his modesty as well, you know. He really was a humble man, and like I think all great coaches, most great coaches will deflect the attention away from him onto his players.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones that go out and achieve the success in the field, but if they haven't got the organisation and the commitment and the various man management skills that are required to deal with so many different characters off the pitch, it isn't going to happen. So, but 23 years in intercounty management is phenomenal. Yeah. Phenomenal record, you know.
Yeah, and when they showed at the end of it the list of titles and achievements, it really, you know, brought it home how successful that career was. You know, he had his low points, obviously, and probably didn't go out in the way that he would have liked to have gone out himself at the very end. But maybe it was a good thing, because it meant that you know, he stayed on that mantle. And sometimes you just have to go. Great documentary, really enjoyable, and highly recommended for anybody that didn't see it. Well worth, for any GAA fan, having a look back on that. I'm sure you'll get it on the player. Okay, the GPA meeting, we discussed a little bit earlier on. I also wanted to go back to it, but given what you said to about Ballyboden and their run of form of late. Players might be benefiting from this break. You know, maybe they were burnt out a little bit. And that's, you know, pretty much the emphasis on what they're looking to do with the GPA. Slim down the season to 26 weeks.
Yeah, I mean, these guys are amateur players after all, you know. The vast majority of them are getting up to go to work in the morning. Those that aren't are going to college. So the commitment level that's involved there. And I know of situations of guys and indeed girls playing top level sport in the county who might leave their home at 7 o'clock in the morning, go into their offices, do a day's work, go to training, come home, mightn't get home till 9:30, 10:00 at night. The next night they might be in college, you know, after work. Mm. Then the next night they're back into the training routine again. You've absolutely no life. Mm. Your commitment level for the greater glory of your county is phenomenal. So it's about time now that people started to listen to the players and their concerns. And as we said earlier on, I think COVID, you know,
is it feasible? Is it possible to slim the season down to 26? I mean, you hear constantly about these congestion issues and fixtures and all the stuff that they come out with all the time. Is it possible to condense it?
What I would suggest possibly is that they could run off league and championship concurrently. They're now two separate competitions. Obviously, the championship is the bigger and far more important one overall. But I mean, if you take soccer in the country, in terms of the SSE Electricity League and the FEI Cup, they go side by side. You've got weekend breaks for it. In rugby, you have the Pro 14. It'll have a block of those games. Then it'll have a block for the Heineken Cup. And then, obviously, Six Nations. I think you need to.
Yeah, but it's non-stop though, Declan. I mean, if you look at and I don't really bring rugby into it because it's a professional sport. I think that changes things completely. You know, so that's what they do. They can manage it because that's all the players do.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, GA is totally different.
But you're running the competitions concurrently.
But you're running them week after week after week. Mm. There's no breaks in the season, so it's got to be managed very carefully with squads of players and everything else. And if you look at this year in the rugby, because of COVID, what's happening for an English player in the Gallagher Premiership, like a Saracens player or whomever it might be, they will play from now till the Lions Tour without any break. And there's a lot of questions about that and player welfare in that sense. But time is again the thing. I mean, where do you put them? Where do you push it into? And that's what I'm wondering, like, you know. Yeah,
well, I think the average team will play probably 6 league games.
Yep. Yeah.
You'll have a semi-final and a final if you're lucky to get that far. So that's 8 games in the league. And then you have the championship, say Leinster quarter-final, semi-final, final is 3. That brings you, what, to 9 games?
Yeah.
Depends on what you do then at the quarter-final stage if you have Super 8s or whatever. So maybe 12 games tops inter-county in the course of the year.
Yeah.
It's doable.
Yeah. Okay.
It's doable with a gap maybe in between one or two weeks.
And what do you think their reluctance has been up to now? Just tradition or history or?
Yeah, I mean, you have the pre-season competitions, the Auburn Cup and the Walsh Cup.
Hmm.
I mean, if you're lucky enough to play with a top club team, right, that goes all the way to the Leinster Club Football Final, like what Bowden did last year as an example, and Coola in hurling had done, and he'd gone further than that in previous years. The football final will be played in or around the 8th of December. The second Sunday in December is usually when it's played.
Yeah.
That's 2 weeks before Christmas, like, in effect. Mm. And you've been on the go since January, the previous January, because you've played a full series of league matches.
Mm.
You've had your club championship then as well. And, like, downtime for players and is just has been eroded significantly, and as managers put greater demands on their players for training.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be Tuesday and Thursday and you played Sunday. It's long since gone now.
It's professional training.
It's long since gone now. You're Saturday morning and you have weekends away and you have all kinds of things as well. So it's this time everyone just to sit down, get around the table. I put my point of view, you put your point of view, and we see if we can come up with a consensus.
Yeah, well, hopefully we will listen to that GPA proposal, and for the good of the players and the good of the game and the sport in general, let's see what can happen. It's time to turn our attention now to football, and delighted to be joined by the host of Cawley's Call, the one and only Alan Cawley, of course, who does a wonderful podcast with Stewie Byrne and John O'Sullivan every week. Morning, Alan. How are you?
Morning, Reggie. I'm good. Thanks. Yourself?
Ah, doing well now. You're outside enjoying that sunshine. I'm shortly to be doing the same thing. I'm looking forward to it. But there's been plenty happening. And last night, I should say, in the Champions League, a great win for City. And I said it to the lads here earlier in studio. I find it quite surprising that we're not surprised by City beating a team like Real Madrid so handily, as it turned out in the end.
Yeah, and I watched the game, Reggie, and yesterday before the match, when I saw even the bookies, kind of, normally sometimes you can take a gauge off that, but had Man City as red hot favourites and Real Madrid as big outsiders, which I thought was a surprise, really, you know, coming off the back of them just winning La Liga as well. But that's exactly how the game transpired. It was very, very comfortable for Man City, even though it was only 2-1. They totally dominated the match. Now, albeit with two really poor mistakes from Raphael Varane, but they never really looked like in trouble. There was a period maybe in the first half, towards the end of the first half, 10-15 minutes to go, around the time when Real Madrid equalised, that you thought maybe they might come on strong. But once Man City got over that patch, the second half they totally dominated, got the winner again. As I said, it was from a mistake but from Varane, but they probably should have scored another two or three. They looked very dangerous and they looked very strong, and it was very comprehensive. And as you said, considering the opposition, and everybody thinks obviously Real Madrid coming to Manchester, that they should put up a much better showing. Yeah. It was a comfortable night for Man City, really.
It was indeed. And we spoke to Leon Blanche earlier from Boyle Sports, and he was saying, you know, City are favourites 2-1 to win it outright now at this stage. He himself feels that maybe Bayern and possibly Atletico could cause a bit of an upset there. But with Leon next for City, you'd have to think that they are in a good position.
Oh, they're in a strong position now, Reggie, and it's after opening up nicely for them. As you say, with Leon, everybody thought Juventus would come through that tie, but Leon beat Juventus. Now, Leon won't be an
push
easy game by any means, but you probably would have taken them over Juventus any day. So it has opened up nicely for them, but I still would go along with Bayern Munich. I watched a fair bit of them in the restart in the Bundesliga. Obviously, they'll be up against much different competition in the Champions League, but they're very, very strong, Reggie, and they're very, very developed. A big strength and depth in terms of their squad as well, and they can chop and change with the quality that they have. So I still think they should come through tonight. They're obviously 3-0 up against Chelsea, and I still think I would fancy them to go on and win it now. But City are in a very, very strong position, and of course Guardiola hasn't won it in 9 years, so he's desperate to win it. And there's that stick that I think it's the only stick to have to beat him with, is that he's never won it with a team without Messi.
Yeah.
So obviously that's something that he wants to totally kind of put to bed, and this could be his chance to do it as well. But we're in for a feast of football for the next 10 days, because they all go off to Portugal now in the playoff, like a little mini tournament, which is going to be great for us to tune into and watch.
Yeah, absolutely, and God knows we need it at this stage.
There's a lot we need at this stage.
There is. The domestic stuff is going back. LNUA Rovers sitting up there at the top with a match in hand as well, sitting there on 18 points, looking good. But Bowes chasing them down hard and up into second place on 15, and after two good goals, first half goals from Danny Grant and Buckley. So Keith Longside, good victory at home.
Oh, fantastic victory, Reggie. Yeah, considering we're playing Dundalk as well, because we all watched Dundalk last week slip up against St. Pat's, and maybe we thought it was just a bump in the road and that we'd seen them back to their best last night. And they needed to be back to their best, and they needed to show a big reaction from the disappointment the last week. But Bohemians totally dominated the game. They played really, really well. And Bohemians are a good side, as we know, but people probably thought Dundalk would beat them. But it was a brilliant win. They went 2-0 up early in the game. Dundalk got one back with Michael Duffy, and you thought the comeback might be on. But even in the second half, Bohemians probably could have scored 3 or 4 more, only for Gary Rogers. They were really, really impressive. And now that takes them into second place. They're the closest challengers at the moment, the Shamrock Rovers. Well, Shamrock Rovers are sitting pretty. And if they win tomorrow, Reggie, against Derry City, they've opened up an 8-point gap on Dundalk. It'll be 6 on Bohemians. But that looks already, even at this early stage, only 2 games into it. But, of course, with the shortened season, there's only 11 games now to go. You would fancy them to go on and win it from here if they go 8 points clear.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I don't know. Dundalk have shown us in the past that they can go behind at an early stage and then make a big...
it happened last year to something similar. Shamrock Rovers got off to a brilliant start.
That's right.
Then Dundalk overhauled them and were relentless then from the summer on after that. But the fact that there's only 11 games to go now, Reggie, time is against them in terms of the amount of games. It's not the traditional season, obviously, with the amount of games that they have time to chase them down. So 8 points would be a serious, serious gap, especially with the quality the Shamrock Rovers have, because they had a great win last week, and obviously they're going up to Derry. Now, it would be a tough ask going up to Derry. Yeah. Derry had a good win against St. Pat's on Monday night, but the form the Shamrock Rovers are in, if they do go 8 points clear, it'll be very, very difficult to stop.
Good man for laying down that gauntlet there now, Alan. There's no doubt about it. The Dundalk lads will be listening going, yes, good man, bring it on.
Alan, good morning to you, Declare. Everyone knows the value of a quality goal scorer. They're rare, they're expensive, but when they're on fire, they're on fire, and they prove their worth. And we spoke, I think, briefly last week about Georgie Kelly and the impact he might have at St. Pat's. And lo and behold, he scores last night in the win over Finn Harps. A brace.
it's why to get the big bucks, Declan, you know, them goal scorers. And to be fair, you're dead right, they are rare, but Georgie Kelly is certainly one. And I was a little bit surprised, we touched on it last week, I was surprised that Dundalk, they'd leave him go, because there you have, and I know they have Patrick Hooban, and it was hard for Georgie to get a game, and Hooban has had a good start to the season. But I felt last year towards the end of the season that Georgie Kelly was knocking on the door and almost beating down the door to overtake Hooban, or certainly to put himself in a position where he'd get more game time. That hasn't happened, and he's desperate to play. And I think he's at the stage now in his career where he needs to be out playing, because after Hooban, he's probably the second best striker in the league. So he goes to any other team and he'll start. So for St. Pat's to get him, Declan, was an unbelievable bit of business by Stephen O'Donnell. And I think it could be a game changer for them getting Georgie in, because we saw it with their performance last week up in Dundalk, the potential that's in that St. Pat's team. And now, as you say, to have a goal scorer in the team, and that's what he did last night. He got two brilliant goals. And that should give him huge confidence going forward as well, because I think it's about time now Georgie got outplayed regularly and established himself as the brilliant striker that he is.
It's consistency, though. That's the thing for Pats, isn't it? They had a good win last night after the disappointment of the Derry result. So to get back-to-back wins together, then you might start to think something is happening.
Definitely, because we gave them all the plaudits last week, and rightly so, because they were so good on the night against Dundalk. But then, as you said, the inconsistency kicks in and they lose to Derry City, who had a poor result themselves on the Friday against Sligo Rovers. But I think that's what Stephen O'Donnell is trying to change, Declan. And you know from being up at the games over the last probably 4 or 5 years since the success under Liam Buckley, I just think St. Pat's, they're almost Arsenal-like, that there's a bit of a soft underbelly to them, where you look at Stevie O'Donnell and something similar with Arteta going in. He's trying to change a culture and a mentality, and that comes with, obviously, as you say, getting victories, getting confidence, but also knowing that you have to be on your game week in, week out. It's no good doing it one week, getting a good result, and then flopping the following week. That's what Stevie did at Dundalk. They were relentless. They used to go out and win every week, and he's trying to bring that culture and mentality the same path. And I think he will, because looking at them last week, I was majorly impressed against Dundalk. There's so much potential now in that St. Pat's team. And now you have Georgie Kelly up top to score the goals as well. So I think it could be good times for St. Pat's going forward.
Easy on the Arsenal comments there now, please.
Cork. You know all about that soft underbelly, right?
So I have a fairly soft,
I think Arteta,
I have a fairly soft belly at the moment.
We all have them soft bellies when you get older. That's
for sure. You're saying Arteta?
Yeah, just like something similar. The similarities are unbelievable, because he's trying to do the same. We think he will, because of coming from Guardiola, the demands that he puts on the players. Arteta would have seen that, and we've kind of seen that in the games already with Arsenal. There has been an improvement, and he's also trying to change the culture there, because for far too long they've been far too weak, Arsenal. So something similar with Pats, and Stevie's of the same ilk. So it was a good win for St. Pat's last night.
I see Bohemians have issued an apology after their comment about Danny Mandrew.
Yeah.
Team news Jeff during the week. That was a bit of a strange one, all right.
I saw that, yeah, and people were making a joke, but I think Danny wasn't too happy.
I wouldn't blame him.
He came out with a tweet, and he was explaining himself, and the club then had to come out with another tweet, and I suppose the ages we live in. I'm sure you played with a few fellas who were gargled on their day, Reggie.
Definitely afterwards. Not quite sure if they were on the day. But he sent out a tweet saying, regarding the team news that they both sent out earlier, that was completely untrue. I'm out injured at the moment. I'm sure you will hear this from the club too eventually. I just wanted to clear that up for myself and my reputation. Can't blame you for that.
No, definitely not. And I don't think people saw it like that anyway. No. Sure, it was obviously a mistake or whatever it was done. So
yeah.
Don't worry, Danny.
Yeah,
he's
be
a great
all right.
player as well. Reggie, he's a great player.
Absolutely, absolutely. No, I can get it. I understand it completely. Now, down the other end, we've done it before, we've touched on it before, but Cork, of course, battling again, right down the bottom.
Yeah, they're playing Waterford today in a massive game for them. Every game's a big game for them, Reggie, but they've had a disaster so far this season. And I feel for Neil Fenn. I'm friendly with Neil. I know him well. He's a good lad as well. But what he's inherited down there, I don't think he even realised himself what he was going into. And I'd say he'd be second-guessing himself now at this stage. But they've a huge game against Waterford. Waterford, obviously, we had a bit of controversy during the week with them and the game called off because one of the lads was suffering with the symptoms. But that game is going ahead now against Cork. And they've had a good start, Waterford. And obviously, John Sheridan as well coming in. Another little bit of an angle to the story there as well, the former Irish international. So I think Waterford will beat them as well at home, Reggie. And I think Waterford could be the surprise package this year. There was a lot of uncertainty around them, but now that John Sheridan has come in, and hopefully he can stabilise things. And there's some decent players as well. A lad played in Talca last week, a new lad, Matthew Smith, on the wing. He was very good. another lad Weir in the midfield. So they have a couple of decent players, so I think they'll beat Cork today.
Yeah, okay, well, that's one to watch. Who's coming up this week on the podcast?
Well, we'll be back on the League of Ireland stuff, but we've an interview with Tomás O'Shea that's going out next week.
Oh, very good.
And Tomás, it is good,
well.
Yeah. Tomás is very good.
Yeah, so. Fantastic. Yeah. Well, he'll know a lot about League of Ireland.
This is a bonus one, right?
I'll definitely tune into that one.
Well, it should be riveting stuff.
One thing, they share the same satirical elegance, that's for sure.
Oh, there's no question about that. It's just that
podcast, not television.
It's just Alan can't spell it. All right. Alan, take care of yourself. Great chatting to you. And we'll catch up. I'm looking forward to that chat with yourself and Tomás. Talk to you soon.
Right. Thanks a million, guys. Bye bye.
Take care. Alan Colley there, host of Colley's Call podcast, which he does, of course, every week with Stewie Byrne and John O'Sullivan. And as he said, Tomás O'Shea, which will be an interesting one this week to listen into and hear what Tomás has to say. I remember bumping into him down in Fota a number of years ago, and I was on holidays with the family, and he was living in Fota Park at the time in a house down there. So great guy. But look, that's all we've got time for this week on the show. It's been a great chat as always. Thanks for listening on Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8, and with thanks of course to InsureMyVan.ie. Our producers today were Paul Morris and Blaine O'Hara. Thank you, Declan, for coming into the studio as well. We'll be back here again next Saturday. Take care and have a great week.